Broadcasting from Hollywood, California, it's Grant's Rants, Hollywood Talk.
Rosie O'Donnell's had a rough couple of months. We dish the latest on the Real Housewives franchises. And we're talking reality TV. All that when my guest co-host Justin Heath joins me next. Let the ranting begin. I'm sitting here with a new friend of mine, Justin. Hello, Justin. Welcome to Grant's Rants.
Hi, how are you?
Good, good. Thanks for coming in. Justin's, like I mentioned, a new friend of mine. We met on LinkedIn networking, of course. Mm-hmm. Not many people establish relationships on a site like LinkedIn that are turned into friendships and chatting about housewives and reality TV. But, you know, we seem to hit it off pretty well.
And, I mean, we both work in the industry. We both have similar interests and I think come from a similar place. I'm from Jersey. And I think that there's a commonality there, and I think we have good conversations, so I'm excited to be here.
Right, absolutely. So I wanted to get right into a little thing that's been on my mind. Here's what's bothering me.
Grant's Rant of the Day.
Last night, I was working out at Crunch really late, and then everyone was gathered around this TV. They were watching, I guess, Trump was going to make a speech down in Alabama, and everyone was running to, you know, to check it out. And I don't know, like the look that he's got going on with the hat, it's now trying to be like this everyman look.
Yeah.
It's bothering me because it's clear, like in one moment he's telling everyone how much money he's worth, how much he has, he doesn't need anyone's money, he's a millionaire 10 times over, but now he's trying to like cool it down with wearing like these little like, you know, golfing jackets.
Yeah. I don't know, I think for so long people's association with him has been The Apprentice and just like this big-headed businessman, and for him, and he still is that, but for him to try and put on this facade that he's anything less than that, and try and relate to everyday citizens in that way, I think it's a bit ridiculous. I think everything about his campaign is a bit ridiculous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at him now with the following that he's gained from his being so public and his strong opinions and things like that. I wonder now if he had the Celebrity Apprentice what the ratings would be, because I'm sure he's gained some new fans, some new people who support him no matter what. You know, there are those like groupie people that just attach. Mm-hmm. I mean, imagine what the ratings would be now.
I think they would be bigger. I mean, obviously NBC severed ties with Trump. I think that he's a similar political figure in my mind to Governor Chris Christie, who is also running. They're both brash and bawdy, but I don't think they really add any real value. I think that they speak very loudly, but their opinions aren't very well-founded.
Right, absolutely. And opinions vary, of course, with Trump. And he's, you know, mentioned Rosie O'Donnell. Megyn Kelly named her. She read off a list of all things that he said against women.
I can't stand Megyn Kelly, but I support her. And I think it was crazy that she got any sort of backlash at all for addressing his comments against women. And I just, yeah.
I'm glad she did it. I feel like you're dealing with that much crazy. You've got to call it out. Sometimes, mm-hmm. You know, not even necessarily like Donald Trump is totally crazy, but looking at all of the Republican nominees right now, there's a colorful cast of characters sitting up there.
Absolutely.
And you gotta kind of, you know, if you're gonna be a journalist, you gotta go there and you're gonna do it. So I'm glad that she did. But, you know, everyone heard it. He said a bunch of things. Then he said it was all just against Rosie. That brought Rosie to the forefront.
Right, and in my opinion, it doesn't make it better. I personally like Rosie O'Donnell. I think she's sort of a liberal version of what Donald Trump can be, which is like brash and bawdy, and she's very out there with her opinions and very forthcoming. But I don't think that makes what he said about her fair game.
Right, but that's true. Those two couldn't be any more opposite.
Polar opposites.
Totally.
It makes for great entertainment and great fodder.
Yeah.
And you need those extremes, definitely. But I think it's very fun to watch them go at it, as long as it's not personal. And then he makes it personal and tries to play it off like it's a joke, which I think
is
BS.
Yeah. I mean, I'll never forget when he was on, like, Entertainment Tonight, and they're talking about how they were having a back and forth in The View. And, like, Donald Trump released a statement, Rosie's a total loser. And
yeah,
like, that was the response.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay. And it's coming back to haunt him today. Now, Rosie O'Donnell's got enough problems, more than dealing with his stupid behind. Now she's, you know, in a real bad situation with her daughter. Did you hear about
her
this?
Her daughter went mad. missing for a few days. Luckily, she was found. Rosie sort of put a plea out on social media to get people's help to find her. But she was found in like a heroin addict's attic.
Oh my God. A mother's worst nightmare.
I was saying that to a friend yesterday. I can't imagine anything scarier as a parent than losing your child and just not knowing where they are.
Yeah. And then having it be involved with someone with drugs.
Yeah.
Who needs serious help. And her daughter has, a mental disability. Mm-hmm. So that's even more of a panic.
Yeah.
When you realize that, you know, someone could be, you know, perhaps easily swayed into doing things or manipulated. I mean, it's just frightening. So she was pretty active, I guess, with social media, mm-hmm. right, to try to get this daughter back.
Yeah, ultimately, though, it was thanks to a specific police officer who was investigating and was able to track her down. But I think that the benefit of social media is that you can get the word out, especially if you're in a position like hers where so many people are listening to what she has to say.
Right. She's had a tough year.
Yeah.
And that was not just the time she spent on The View.
Yeah.
That was a disaster.
That show is going down in flames, and I just want it off there.
Yeah. I can't even go into that. That's like a whole episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, when it comes to Rosie, I wish her well. It just seems like she's like one of those people that just lives a complicated life.
Mm-hmm. But I think she's a good person. I like Rosie O'Donnell. I grew up with Rosie hosting the Kids' Choice Awards and being the nanny in Harriet the Spy. So that's sort of like how I know Rosie O'Donnell. And right. I like her.
But do you think she's kind of lost her way somewhere along the path there? Do you think she kind of maybe went on the crazy train for a couple spins?
I think she stopped caring what people thought about her. Listen, I think she went through hell when she first came out as gay in the media. I think she decided that once she was out, she was going to live her life as honestly as possible, opinions and all. She was on The View back about 10 years ago, and people sort of villainized her in a sense because it was like, oh, here's like big fat lesbian Rosie like beating up on Elizabeth Hasselbeck, who is another one like comes from reality TV. I liked her on Survivor so much, and she has since revealed herself to be an idiot. So
yeah, they reveal them their yeah. true being, and then of course getting involved in this industry probably brings things out in
itself.
You know, that like you probably didn't realize even yourself.
Yeah.
You know,
and also you had executives in your ears saying, okay, like this is good. Like we want to keep you. Keep doing what you're doing. We're going to pay you more. We're going to keep you. So that also comes into play.
And the cycle continues now that they've got Raven and now this Candace Cameron Bure is going to be on The View.
They're all idiots. They all say stupid things.
They're already, the network executives are already pitting those two against each other.
Yeah.
It's like well known that they're hoping to get that whole like Elizabeth and Rosie feud going this time over. And I mean, you know, we have to look at the big picture here. This is a show that's under ABC News, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to be, you know, a woman's talk show, and it's supposed to be organic, right?
Right. It's supposed to be conversational, and yeah. I think that they're trying to set it up more like it's a what were they in, like ancient Roman times, in the Colosseum?
Yeah, the Colosseum. Yeah.
Like, you know, like they're trying to set it up to be like this like epic fight, and it shouldn't be. It should be a conversation, because I do think, as women, hopefully they do have a lot of things that they can relate with one another on. But I think that they want ratings. You know, that's yeah. what it's a business, mm-hmm. and people often forget that it's entertainment, but it's the entertainment business.
Right. Well, this is why I'm glad to have you here, because you have good insight when it comes to the business, specifically with Unscripted TV. Mm-hmm. So let's make a move over to talking about The Housewives and kind of the state of that franchise. What do you think in general?
Well, in general, I'm so excited to talk about The Housewives. I think it's one of the best and probably the pinnacle of like what a reality franchise can be in terms of successfulness. That's not to say that every one of the cities or series that they've put out has worked. But I think that it's some really, really great television. I think in a lot of ways, it's very well produced, but it's also organic. And I think it's very interesting. Right now, the New York City Housewives is wrapping up what I think has been a phenomenal season. Bethany came back. I think the cast was like on their A game. And I think they had a lot of interesting drama. But then there's also the Orange County Housewives, who I think they've been on for 10 years. It's the 10th season. They're well over 100 episodes at this point.
They've always been a little bit lighter. The OC drama has always been a little bit less.
It's different personalities, and that's what I love about the franchise, is every city has its own flavor. And I think so you get a different mix, you get a different feeling from all these women.
Right. As a whole, the Real Housewives in general, at the top of the pyramid, what do you think of the whole series itself and the longevity that it's had? But also, you know, how long can we keep it going? Bravo said that they no longer want to be putting out any more new cities.
I think you might be surprised. I've heard some rumblings that there's a new city coming.
I would love that. I mean, it's about time. They really should do
I think
that.
They should strike Miami. Like, no one really cares.
No one cares. That was the most insignificant franchise. Couldn't handle one of those women. And I enjoy the show. I cover the show on AfterBuzz TV. I'm tweeting about it. I'm very involved. I'm a little bit more than your average viewer. But with that one, I really couldn't be bothered.
Well, I think Bravo's very smart. They air them on a cycle. They seem to have two cities going at a time. But I think they should kill Miami. Whatever this new city is, they should bring it in to sort of replace that. Jersey is on a hiatus right now. They're apparently waiting for Teresa to get out of prison.
See, I think if any of them are ripe for cancellation, beyond Miami, of course, I already consider that one dead, just not buried. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's like in the wings waiting. But I think that New Jersey Housewives could easily be canceled at this point, because I'm so against it when it comes to the casting. It's been lousy. I haven't seen a good season in 4 seasons. I enjoy the show, but it's like, okay, what are we doing with this? And we're going to hold the whole thing hostage for Teresa to be done, just to go back for her to be on good behavior on camera. I don't care.
I care. I love Teresa Giudice. I was so over their family drama that lasted for 3 seasons. I think that was like so tired and I was sick of it. But I do think that people are very invested in her. I think that the fans that do watch her are the most enthusiastic that you see on social media. I think that the twins that they cast were great. I personally love those twins. I thought they were so fun.
Oh my God, I hated them.
Fast talking, a little bit loopy. Oral sex and Dunkin' Donuts line had me like dying all season. I thought it was amazing. And I think they tried some things out and they just didn't work. I, going into that last season, was saying that I really hope they keep Melissa, bring back Dina.
No, and, I hate her.
And cast 3 new women. That's exactly what they did, and it didn't work. Right. I hated Amber Marchese. I hated her husband even more. It was great
drama,
very
unlikable,
but it was also
just
too much.
Mm-hmm. See, the Dina thing, I could have told you from square one that wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
I'm not a fan of hers. She's all talk and no action. She's a whiner. I don't care for her. I don't believe she really had much to bring. I enjoyed her relationship with Danielle, or lack thereof, the relationship.
Yeah.
I enjoyed that. But yeah, I am not a fan of hers. She's one of my all-time least favorites of the whole thing.
Yeah.
The twins are right behind her.
Really?
Yeah.
I enjoy them. I really do.
But you know, it's interesting you mentioned that the fans are the most enthusiastic about the show, because that's the one Housewives that I have like the most like opinionated thought process about. Like, I feel the most strongly about the casting and the women and the storylines on New Jersey than any of the others.
Well, here's the thing. I think it's almost a tougher show to produce than a lot of the other Housewives, because they're family. Like, it's a show about family. That's what changes it. Like, yes, you have the Richard sisters on Beverly Hills, but this is, if it's not just one family that's the focus, there's two. Right? They had the Manzos, the Manzo-Lorita family, and the Giudice Gorga family. So it's like, it's a whole deeper dynamic than you get on other Housewives, which is like, oh, she didn't come to my fashion show, boo freaking who, you know?
Right, that's
true.
There's
like a history there, and it's so much more fascinating, and also like way more effed up when they go through drama on camera.
Yeah, no, I agree. I wish that they weren't holding that franchise hostage. I think what they should have done was cast the show, put it in a new direction, and then set it up so Teresa comes into the fold halfway through.
I think that may be what they're doing. Melissa Gorga Instagrammed a photo of her son being interviewed for what looks like Housewives. Hmm. And I had a friend who did the casting on whatever this next season is. I know they got into casting and they were looking for a Lisa Vanderpump type, but I don't think they found her. We'll see. We'll see. Yeah. I'm excited as a fan just to see what happens and if it's good.
Well, yeah, I want it to be good. I think I will give it one more shot. I mean, who am I kidding? I'll watch.
What's happening with Teresa's house and her husband? Like, what's going on?
Well, right. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that Melissa posted that photo of her son being interviewed, because I'm curious if that's for the Bravo special that they're going to be doing, highlighting Teresa's family with her being away. It's supposed to be coming out. It's going to be a one-time deal, and they had no choice but to sign on to do it because of the money, and they need the money. Yeah. So it could easily be for that, or, you know, maybe they're doing some chemistry tests. I don't know why they would need Melissa's son for a chemistry test, but who knows?
Yeah.
We never know. And a lot's been going on with Teresa's house, both homes. One of them, the Shore House, recently was put up for auction. There was a big party they had the weekend before it went up for auction, and apparently the police had to get involved. Joe was yelling at the oldest daughter, Gia, and it was a huge mess. And then the next day they had to vacate the house totally. Mm. It went up for auction. The starting bid was $100. And what do you think the bids were?
Oh my God, 105? Like, what?
Nothing.
Oh my God.
Nobody bid on the house. It was starting at 100, and then it was going to go up 1,000 increments after that.
But I've seen the house on television. It looks like a nice shore house.
They said it was completely redone. Everything is totally new and renovated post Hurricane Sandy. It's been hardly used.
And no one bid on it? I want to bid on it. I want $100. Like, what?
I know, right? Well, then you have to go and you kind of have to pay the difference of what they owe. Or there's a certain amount.
There's a cap.
So, yeah, you're not just opening the door for $100.
Yeah, you're investing in their legal problems? No.
Mm. And then now it's completely over to the bank. So the lock is on the door. No one's using it. It's locked up. So I'm kind of surprised that, and this would be really bad taste, but I'm surprised that no one from the family jumped in and took over, you know, and put the $100 in.
Yeah,
at least like hold on to it, and it's that way. It's theirs; they own it. But like,
it's gonna be on the next season. She's gonna be like, Joey, why didn't you save my house?
I mean, he could easily, do it. But maybe, and I don't blame them. They don't want to get involved in that disaster.
Yeah.
I mean, I would want to stay as far away from that legal mess as possible. So now Teresa's getting out in December. She's, it's kind of right around the corner. Mm-hmm. So what can we expect from her? A total tell-all?
She's supposedly writing a memoir in jail. I can't wait to see how well it's written or not. I wish there was a tell-all from her co-author who could tell me how many words they had to spell correctly.
God.
But, I think it'll be good. I think, listen, she's going to come back on Housewives. She's going to be out there. That's when the book is going to come out. One way or the other, it's all going to play hand in hand. She's got a plan, and she's going to be back out there just as famous as she was before she went to jail.
Mm-hmm. So do you see this new season being a total new direction for the franchise, or kind of, the pop-up people like Rosie's going to show up, and then we're going to have to look at, Kathy trying to pretend she's got a lot of money?
I think it's going to be like revisiting old friends in a sense with some new cast members, hopefully, and some new drama.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really what it's going to be. I don't know if Teresa is really going to play ball on the drama. She really tried to keep herself out of it in the last season, but hopefully, I don't know. Her husband's going away to jail. That's enough drama in and of itself. So it's really going to be Teresa as a new mom, getting reacquainted with her family and trying to manage all of that. And whoever else they bring in, I sincerely hope Amber Marchese is gone, though.
Mm-hmm. That's how I feel about the twins.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see it even. One of them doesn't even own a home. She lives with her parents. And it's like, this is a show where people in Beverly Hills live in Beverly Park in multi-million-dollar estates. And these people are on the same type of franchise show. It's supposed to be aspirational and show off wealth. And, I know the woman was going through, a divorce, and she was, kind of resetting her life. But maybe don't make her a full-fledged housewife.
I like that swim better, though, than the other one, than Teresa.
The both of them. I can't stand them. Goodbye. let's talk about New York Housewives. You mentioned that you think this is one of the best seasons. I've looked at a few episodes here and there. It's one of those shows that I've always watched casually and never like been on every, like, you know, invested in every single one. But I'm very interested in the reunion episode. Now, at the time of us taping this, just the first part has aired, and that had a lot of stuff. They touched upon a lot in that.
They touched upon a lot, but they also, I was surprised to see Carol and Luann really going at it in a very vicious sort of way. Carol basically put out there that Luann hooks up with young guys in bathrooms when they go out together on national television in front of 2 million viewers. Like, that's insane to me, like, point blank.
And it didn't look like Luann was doing too much defending of herself.
Well, it was a very weird sort of back and forth. Luann's upset because Carol is dating her niece's ex-boyfriend. And he's something like 25 years Carol's junior. But Luann sort of is making it an issue that she came in and is sleeping with this younger guy, dating him, really. When Luann basically does the same thing and is being hypocritical, in my opinion. Granted, she does have the family connection, but the fact that Carol is still with this guy 8 months later, I think speaks volumes about the fact that it's not just sort of like a one-off hookup. And that's kind of what Carol's getting at. She just said it in a much meaner way than we're used to seeing
right.
her.
You know what moment I liked? I liked when they were talking about Sonia's relationship with the Kennedys.
Yeah, I love Sonia.
And she reminds me of a lot of people I know, that Sonia. She's a real mess.
Yeah, but I love all of the New York Housewives. Like, I don't dislike any of them.
Right. I can't say I really do either. For a while, and I still, like, if the one, yeah, I know no one's going to agree with me, but the one I like least is Bethany. I really don't care for her in certain ways. Now, the reunions kind of changed my opinion about her because she did kind of backtrack. I was like, look, like, that early part of the season probably was a little too early for me to be able to engage in something like this. But I can understand that. I love her one-liners. She's probably a story producer's dream. She can just easily tie everything together, and she's involved in everyone's business in her own way, including her own. Her apartment looks amazing. Mm-hmm. It was funny because I was recently in CB2, Crate and Barrel 2 or whatever, and I said, oh, I love this. I love everything about this. Then she was in that show. She was in that store in one of the episodes. Mm-hmm. And then when she showed up for her apartment on the finale, I noticed a lot of stuff from CB2.
That's so funny.
That's definitely her store.
I love Bethany. I just like that I think she's very self-aware. Like, she understands the insanity of the whole situation, and she's there to enjoy it. You know, she's like, listen, I'm on a TV show. I'm here to be a part of this entertainment. Like, yes, there are going to be disagreements and fights, and I'm willing to engage, but I'm also, like, willing to acknowledge how crazy this is and sometimes stupid. And she has a good time with it, I think.
Right, yeah. Well, I want to know more about this upcoming new city that could be possibly added to the Housewives.
I don't know what. All I know is I've heard some things. I know there's a new city. It's a city that I think people have been wanting.
East Coast, West Coast.
I'm not going to say.
Okay.
Anything. You have to guess. It's a region that hasn't been tapped yet, but I think it's going to be exciting. Mm-hmm. I think that it's perfect for an addition for the Housewives.
Well, I kept hearing about Real Housewives of Dallas, but that was years ago, and I never knew if that was really something that would be, like, the most fitting.
The best hints that I can give you, and I'm not saying you're right or wrong, but the best hints that I can give is to look at the shows that Bravo announced that they're upfronts this year, and you can derive from that.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll have to do a little bit more research. I love, as we're talking about these new shows and upfronts, you know, obviously, you know, you love Bravo and as well as I do. What else are you watching beyond The Housewives? Have you looked at that show, Million Dollar Listing, San Francisco?
Yeah, again, on Bravo. But I did. I really enjoyed it. I only saw the premiere, but I really loved the three realtors that they cast for the show.
See, we have a different taste because I like the idea of the show. I just don't like the casting. I can't relate to any of those three men.
I like them. I think that they're different. They all have their own unique personalities. I think that San Francisco is a welcome addition to the Million Dollar Listing franchise. I really liked, at least in the premiere, that they had so much of the conversation between the field producers and the cast in their interviews. It felt more conversational. I think that it engaged the viewer in a different way.
Like breaking the fourth wall.
Yeah, they broke the fourth wall totally. And it, I don't know, just it's a different city, totally different flavor. It's all young, successful tech people that are buying these multi-million-dollar homes. So you get a sense of where the future generation is moving and like what they're interested
right.
in buying.
And I think it's a great idea. I'm just not interested in those three guys. And I love Million Dollar Listing LA, but even some of the casting over there, it's kind of like the two new guys they had on last season. Just I didn't think really fit with where we were going, and you know who knows where you know. What the future holds for those shows. But I enjoyed them. I never really took to the one. It was one in Miami, right? I never watched that one.
They did it in Miami. Mm-hmm. But
Miami programming, they have a hard time with that.
Yeah.
There's absolutely. Very few, especially reality-based shows, that really have survived coming out of Miami.
I don't know what it is. You would think that it would be great. I think there's definitely a specific look that Miami has. The only season of a Miami show that I can think really withstood and did well was Jersey Shore when they did their second season in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
Bad Girls Club Miami was a thing, too, and that was fun, but I can't talk about that show anymore. It's the best, worst TV I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, no. I had to work on that show for a hot minute. You know, one season, that was enough for me. I didn't even bother to watch the show when it aired because I was so over it. I'm still there. I'm still not ready. I'm not ready. It's been like 6 years and I'm not ready.
As far as the other shows on the air, there's this amazing show on the History Channel called Alone. It was just picked up for a second season. The premise is basically 10 men are dropped remotely in this area of the Pacific Northwest, and they're given a few tools to survive, flint, a tarp, basic necessities. And there's no camera crew around them. They shoot everything themselves. And they're all there to outlast one another, even though they're secluded and can't reach each other, outlast one another and ultimately win a cash prize at the end, whoever's stayed out there the longest. They just don't know where the other competition stands at any point. So they're really just, it's a testament to their will. And they're really secluded in a way that Survivor doesn't touch on. And none of the other survival shows really go there in the same way. And it's doing phenomenally well.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like that's the most stripped, bare bones version of a Survivor type show, which all that stuff is still really popular. It's interesting. I can only imagine the budget on a show like that when there's no crew. Yeah. That must be a cable network stream show. Mm-hmm. I mean, as long as they get the content.
It's great. I think the threats that they face are very real. I only saw the first episode, but there was a guy who was being stalked by a bear at his camp. And not to spoil it for everybody, but he taps out on the first night. He's like this big burly man, and he's like, I've never been more terrified in my life. I cried like a baby. It was so horrifying.
Wow.
It's really, really riveting television.
Mm-hmm. So interesting. Well, looking at the fall lineup, I'm a little disappointed in seeing that there are no big reality shows returning American Idol, if you count that as a big show. Mm-hmm. But coming to the fall lineup on the network side, there's really nothing new. There's nothing unscripted that's out of the box. Mm-hmm.
They seem to test the waters in the summer.
Yeah.
In the summer months, that's when I think the off cycle of scripted programming, they really try to fill those content hours with bigger reality shows. Home Free on Fox, I really liked. I don't think it's doing super well in the ratings. I'm not sure. But I think that it hits all the same notes that Extreme Home Makeover used to. It's very emotional programming and it's feel good, but I think it's very entertaining.
Mm-hmm. Well, we'll have to see. There's a lot coming up in the fall, and I think we'll have another podcast talking all about fall TV coming up.
You're listening to Grant's Rants. Please rate, subscribe, and share on iTunes and social media. Spread the word. There are a lot more rants to come. Follow us on Twitter at Grants_Rants. And now for the one-on-one.
All right, now that we've completed ranting about reality TV and television in general, let's turn the tables on you now. Let's talk a little bit more about you. Of course, you know, we met on LinkedIn because at the time we both had similar positions as development assistants. So, you know, what do you do? What you know, where are you right now?
I work at an unscripted television production company. I don't want to say which one, but I work for a great team of people who are very talented, make some amazing TV shows that you see on the air right now on both broadcast and cable networks, and it's great. I'm learning a lot. I am just out of college a little over a year, so it's been a pretty interesting ride so far.
Now, has the goal been development from day one, or did development find you?
I interned in development, and I don't think I knew that I was surefire wanting to be in unscripted television, but that's what sort of found me. So, in a sense, I knew I wanted to go to development, but I didn't know that it was going to be unscripted. That's what found me. Mm-hmm. And I realized that I grew up with reality television in the sense that I grew up at the same time that reality television was growing up. And I grew up watching The Real World, and those shows developed their formats, they developed an industry around them the same time that I was growing up and internalizing it.
True. It's weird because I've started to notice now that a lot of these reality shows are in their 10th or 10th plus season, and you've got a show like American Idol, which is now, you know, on its way out, and it peaked, and it's kind of, you know, wrapping up. But it's almost like, in my mind, these are almost like still semi-new shows, because reality TV and the TV landscape is still considered more of a new movement. But at this point, you know, it's so established, and it's been here a while. It almost kind of seems like, you know, everyone's been waiting for reality TV to be a fad and to pass, and it's now it's kind of found its place, you know, in cable and specifically on network. So it's just, it's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I think that that sentiment that reality is going away, people are over it, and they've realized it's here to stay. And unscripted television and programming has existed in some form since the birth of television.
True.
There were game shows on TV back in the 50s, 60s. So it's always been there. It just took a different form in the last 20, 30 years, but it's here to stay.
Absolutely. Now, you're from New Jersey, as you mentioned. So why are you out here, and why aren't you in New York? I like to ask people, I love to ask East Coasters, because when I grew up in Rhode Island, I was always thinking like the big city is New York City. Like that's just where people go, you know. At least in the Rhode Island mentality, from where I came from, it seems like people didn't go that far. If they were going to go far, it would be, you know, somewhere on the East Coast. So I never thought about moving out to Los Angeles until I was in college. And I was like, well, if I don't do this now, what am I going
to
do?
Well, I went to Boston University, and I was a film and television major. And I knew that as part of that major, you had the ability to study abroad in Los Angeles for a semester and intern. So that was always the end goal. I didn't know for sure that I wanted to move here until I came out here and sort of got to do a trial run of what life in LA would be like. I interned at a commercial production company, which did commercials and music videos. And I also interned in development for the executive producer of The Price is Right, which was really cool, and his director of development. So that was sort of my foot in the door. I did news internships back in Boston. But I don't know, I decided that I really wanted to move to LA because A, there are more jobs out here for people in television, especially young people.
Absolutely.
And also, I grew up around New York City my whole life. I was a 30-minute train ride away. I was in and out of the city, and I, in a not morbid way at all, decided that when I am on my deathbed, I wanted a more interesting life story than to say I grew up in Jersey, went to college in Boston, and then just lived in New York. Perhaps one day I will move back to New York, but I'd rather do that when I have more money than in my 20s, where in LA the weather is great and I can hike on the weekends, and I have a great job in reality television.
Right. Absolutely. I kind of feel similar. Like, I'll do New York someday, maybe if and when I can afford to do it on my own and not have to have several roommates. Mm-hmm. That's, like, out of the question. Mm-hmm. So that's something I need to kind of, like, put on hold.
Yeah.
Because as we sit here and as this podcast broadcasts, the prices continue to go up. They're not going down. Nope. So the longer I wait, the further I am outpriced. Mm-hmm. But I know that for me and my lifestyle right now, I absolutely can't consider it.
Yeah.
You know, and I don't really necessarily want to. I mean, what's not to like here, yeah. You know? I mean, but there are definitely certain parts of Hollywood that I can deal without, you know?
Absolutely.
But that comes with all of it. So very interesting. So, you know, what is your long-term goal?
I'm still trying to figure that out. I want to continue to work in television. It's a passion of mine. I hope to be an executive producer in some capacity in both documentary and unscripted television and documentary film at some point one day. I think that they go hand in hand. I met an amazing, established, successful producer a few months back, and I was talking to her about this. And I was saying that I don't really know which way I want my career to go, like what I should do. And she was like, do both. I've done both. You can have two careers that go hand in hand. It can lead you from one place to another. And you shouldn't limit yourself in that way. So I think I'm still just trying to learn and soak up as much as I can. And I think that I am. But I'm also excited for wherever I do end up, but we'll have to wait and see.
That's so true, though. You kind of have to have two things going on at all times.
Yeah.
Two pursuits, two goals, one side project. Like,
plus,
you're also
just like trying to keep a lid on your personal life, right? Like,
yeah.
You're trying to like go to the gym, like buy groceries, like maintain like personal relationships. So, mm-hmm. There's a lot that goes into just being a person, but I think that's the fun of it all.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, you mentioned that you were over at Fremantle, mm-hmm. right, with. The Price is Right, where you were interning. Now, I know that you also spent some time over on America's Got Talent.
Mm-hmm.
Big show, network show, interesting. What can you say about that? What was that experience like?
It was interesting to sort of be a very small part of a very huge team. The scale of that show, I can't even describe it. It's similar to Idol, where they just, when you realize how many moving parts there are, to what goes into making a show like that, it's really fascinating. The number of people, the amount of money that they spend. I was a part of the casting team, and I was doing a very small part of a huge, huge team. I don't think I can even emphasize enough like how many people they had working for them. Easily, I want to say total like 30 plus people at some points trying to cast that show.
Just casting alone.
Mm-hmm. Just casting. And it was astounding, but also exciting. It was a network show. And I think that it helped me see one side of the television making process that I hopefully use in the future to make myself a better.
Right. Oh, you'll definitely be able to build on that. Yeah, what's so fascinating about that show to me is just the amount of crew that is involved with that and the traveling with those shows in general. That, I mean, there are people who work on that show. It's like a full, almost a year-long process, give or take a few weeks just to get that one season out. People live and breathe for that. And that's what's so interesting about American Idol going away, because there are people who have been on American Idol for years and now they have to figure out what they're going to be doing next. Specifically, you know, directors and certainly EPs on that show, they've had to start looking for work early on. Even though the show's on now, they need to start lining things up, because when you get so involved in these shows, that's it. That's your network.
They're all calling their agents and saying, okay, like I need to get back out there. Like, all they've needed their agents for the last 10 years, if they've been there that long, is to renegotiate their contracts and whatever. But now they're like, okay, like, send me out. Like, I want to meet people. Let's get this ball going. But yeah, for a lot of people, it's scary. It's like, it is. It's losing a job. Mm-hmm. It's being laid off.
How do you feel about those big shiny floor shows, though? There's not as many people, you know, jumping from a show like America's Got Talent You know, there's no X Factor. It's even So You Think You Can Dance has been rumored to be on its final season for a long time now. You know, what do you think of the future of that? Is there another one coming? Is there another voice?
I think the one, it already came. It's on Spike. It's called Lip Sync Battle. But I don't know that you're going to see as much of it on network television. For me, just as a viewer, it feels a bit hokey, some of those. Like, they feel like throwback televisions. But they're
agree.
They're also easy to watch, and a lot of people like to watch them. America's Got Talent is the number one summer show on NBC, on cable. It's getting like 10 million viewers a week.
But that show's been on for a while. I remember...
10 years.
Yeah. I remember, like, as a kid, having to go out, like, helping my dad cut the grass and then coming in and it was on. So just, like, and that, I was, like,
with, like, Brandy and David Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, my gosh. That show has come very far. It's definitely benefited from the success of Idol. But, I don't know, it'll be interesting to see if we see other shows in that same vein. But I think all those talent competitions are really on their way out. People are over it. It's
right.
Been there, done that.
Mm-hmm. When did you know that you wanted to work in this business of television?
I knew I always wanted to work in entertainment, in Hollywood. And for a long time, I thought it was the movies. But Unscripted really, like I said, called my name without me even realizing it. I think I tried to fight it for a little while before realizing this is what I know, and I know it very well, and I'm good at it. But I think television was always what I wanted to do. I think that getting a message out there, the ability of media to just reach far and wide, it's always been so interesting to me. You know, like, you can reach so many people through the television. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's, like, what's most exciting.
Right. Now, I've had a lot of ups and downs, you know, and a lot of times where it's, like, kind of some dicey situations. What's been a moment out here? When has a moment occurred when you're like, okay, this is really testing how much I want this?
Well, I think just really being a part of the staff at the company that I'm at now, I've learned a lot. I think dealing with learning how to take criticism. I don't want to say too much. And I love my job. I love where
right.
I'm at. But I think, like, I had to be toughened up in terms of workplace, because my early jobs in television were more so you had a specific task and that was it. And, like, you just sort of, like, come in, do your thing, do your job that you're assigned to do. Whereas now I'm responsible for a lot more. And there was a learning curve for me, and I think I had to take some criticism in that aspect. And it was tough because you, as a young graduate, are definitely putting your best foot forward, but that doesn't always, I think, show. And sometimes you just have to learn by doing, and you have to learn by screwing up and hitting your head a few times, but I'm better for it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, similar experience here. I mean, it's like kind of school of hard knocks. Mm-hmm. You just, a lot of these positions, you know, that we face out here are positions we're just kind of, you know, thrown into. Of course, we're, you know, competitive and qualified for these roles, of course. But you know, there's certain things that are not taught, and you have to figure it out as you go along the way. It can be a rocky path. But I mean, they say in general, it takes like 3 months to really learn a job. But I feel like that's
the exact time
really,
frame it took.
Yeah. I think sometimes even if your work depends who you're working with, but if you're like a right-hand man to someone, or if you're directly assisting a team of multiple personalities, it can even take longer. You know, so you do have to kind of go through that process where you're like, okay, you know, you have to find like that fire to keep the engine going. Now, how do you kind of keep rolling? What kind of keeps you motivated?
The people I work with are really great. They're great personalities. I consider them friends now. And I think that I just feel like I've found my people. I've found my niche. We are interested in the same things. We creatively work very well together.
That's so ideal and so... almost, I don't want to say rare, but you're very lucky.
I'm very lucky, I think, in like most aspects of my life. And I think what else keeps me going is just like the acknowledgement of where I am versus just where I've come from, and that I've reached a lot of my goals thus far. So I think that's what keeps me going, is that I know that it's possible if you really put in the work, if you try, and if you're with a little bit of luck, like, you can make things happen for yourself.
How long have you been living out in Los Angeles now?
Officially 14 months. I officially moved here last June, but I did my internship program through school the January prior to that. So I guess a year and a half, a little more.
Has the luster kind of worn off for you at all?
Not really, because I walk outside and it's for the most part 75 and sunny every day.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I still haven't gotten the still hasn't worn off yet.
Well, when I first moved here, I didn't love it. That's the thing. Like, really? I had to grow to like LA. Mm-hmm. I thought in comparison to New York, which is the what I compare every city to, I was like, LA is so the buildings are like spread out. There's not like a one specific center. It's like 10 million cities in one. It's all neighborhoods and this and that. And I didn't like the architecture. But now I really like it for what it is. I really, really do. I love the weather, like everybody does. And I like that I have become a person who listens to podcasts on my way to work. You miss out on some things, but you gain others. So I don't get to read, but I'm listening to podcasts and I'm culturing myself in different ways.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, it has. It's a totally different culture for sure, from especially from how you grew up. Now, of course, living out here in Hollywood, what's been like a real Hollywood experience you've had out here? What's been something a little crazy that you wouldn't have had in Jersey?
I am going to see Taylor Swift tonight for free. I've gone to plenty of pop shows in my life. Britney Spears, Beyonce, all the really, really good ones.
Yeah.
But I've never gone for free, and it's because I got a hookup through my friend who is also working at another television production company, and her boss gets free tickets all the time for shows, and she couldn't go to this one, and apparently the seats are like third row, and she asked me to go, and I found out yesterday. Wow. And I cannot wait. It's just a few hours away, so I'm so excited.
The perks of being an assistant and a friend to a good assistant too, right?
Absolutely.
That's so cool. A third row. That's going to be a great show for sure.
I know. I hope she brings out some good guests. It's LA.
Yeah, right?
It's got to be someone good. Kobe Bryant was there last night.
Oh, really? So. All right. Well, thank you for coming in and ranting with me.
Thank
I love
you for
talking
having
about
me.
The unscripted shows because we're on such on the same page, except when it comes to those twins on New Jersey. Yeah. So is there anything you want to promote? Where can we find you to keep the conversation going?
On social media, Instagram and Twitter, I am the Justin Heath, JustinHeath. I can't even spell my own name.
All right. We'll put your Twitter handle and the information surrounding this episode. So and your Instagram as well.
Yeah, great. I'm so glad you had me on. This is wonderful.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, well, we'll keep the conversation going.
This has been Grant's Rants. Follow us on Twitter at Grant's_Rants. Cover art created by Howie Ronay. Voiceover by Sir Richard Wentworth. Original theme music composed by Alexander Arnson. Granted Wish Productions 2015.